Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
They did it, Javier. The Elite. Even the score 3-3. LeBron James, like, in a street fight, which I thought was distinct from the other matches and perhaps more deadly. What'd you think of the sixth outing between these two teams? And is the best of seven series holding your interest? And do you think it's piquing viewer interest heading into the second week of the new year in LA 2 weeks from now?
I don't know if piquing my interest is the right term. Cause I mean, the format of it is just like, essentially, to me telling me, hey, we're going to have seven matches between these teams, and we're going to spice it up with different stuff. So I kind of already know what's coming into it. But hey, you know, I'm glad they did this because they haven't had one of these, you know, backstage things in a while. And I do like it to mix things up. I really hope Kenny Omega's okay, because that looked he wasn't a sell job. It looked like he might have, you know, hurt himself pretty bad there. Hope everything's okay, since, you know, if he's not available for the seventh match, that kind of defeats the whole purpose of the whole thing. I thought it was a good, it was fun. It's what I expected. This whole set, you know, there was no drama for me in terms of who was going to win or lose.
That is the negative of this. It's like some best of three falls matches where, you know, once one person scores a win, you kind of figure the other person is going to score the second fall. If it's a, near even battle, it's not a mismatch between people in different spots on the roster. That said, if you know they're going to fight seven times and you're into this style of match, have they done a good job creating a story with the, even if it's predictable in one respect, have they told an interesting story, even if you kind of knew the outcome of the matches once it became 3-1, that there'd be two wins in a row from the Elite? Have they made the matches distinct from one another and memorable?
Yeah, I mean, as far as if you're just watching the matches, that's, well, this one is, because the first batch is just like, you know, I can't really pick one out of the ones previous to this one. This one, I remember, and I think it's a good idea to have this match the way it was, because the fact that this was the ending was a foregone conclusion, you're really just there to watch the car crash. So, you know, if you're into that sort of thing, I think this was the best time to have it, because you're going to have entertainment even though you know how it's going to end anyway. What was your question? I might have drifted.
Well, no, you did well. I okay. think they could have, if they wanted to add some drama, they could have said, if the series doesn't go to a seventh and deciding match in Los Angeles, the loser of the best of seven series will get a rematch in Los Angeles. Now that would be kind of dumb, but they could have basically said either way, there's going to be a match or something along those lines to try to create a little bit of drama. As for the finish of this match, though, having a near tap out, a Pac and Matt Jackson in the ring as Omega hit the big move elsewhere and going to split screen, I thought was well executed. We can talk about the like actual legit danger and potential injury from Omega when he was grabbing at his tailbone after leaping off a platform and crashing through a table. My interpretation was it was just selling, but either that or he was having a heart attack. I mean, he was kind of pointing at his chest too as he talked to the ref, but he did let the ref raise his arm. I interpreted it as selling. But either way, I thought the split screen drama worked. And, if you're looking for a way to create some, I don't want to say false drama, but lull the fans into wondering, I thought that was a clever way to do it.
Yeah. It was a nice visual for the most part, so I thought it was good. And it was a nice also, I like the near fall when they did the Meltzer driver on the outside. And it, you know, and just you know, Excalibur really called it well, that it was like Pac broken up at 2.9999. That was a good near fall, because you know it's a finisher and you would expect that the match would be over there. And that's the only that I mean, again, not really drama on the finish, but you know, usually you knew that there was gonna be another near fall in the favor of Death Triangle. So, you know, the fact that they tied that into the outside, the Young Bucks and, sorry, the Elite taking advantage of the rules and also winning on the outside was also pretty, it was a neat enough finish.
Let's broaden this out in a macro sense. Regardless of what they do in match number 7 in LA, has this raised the profile of the Bucks and Kenny and Pac and Death Triangle on a whole? Are they going to be in a better place, win or lose, coming out of match 7 because of this series? Is this a series that genuinely will be talked about, you know, for years to come as a classic? Or is it going to be seen as sort of a manufactured classic? You know, the more cynical view is the Bucks and Kenny just wanted to work a certain style of match coming out of the controversy with Punk. They sort of want to be in their own little corner doing their thing, and this was a way to sort of indulge their desire to just do the thing that they like to do, and they got to do it over and over again ad nauseum. And I generally don't make that point because I necessarily agree with it. I really am just presenting it as the alternate view of this, which is, oh, my God, they're going to spend 2 months having all these matches instead of trying to do something to broaden their influence on the brand. So what do you think it has done for them, and where do you think each team goes from here? And do you think it's legit to think both ways about it in kind of the two extremes that I brought up?
I think it's legit to think both ways. You could put me down more on the cynical camp. Not to say that, you know, I'm not enjoying the matches for what they are, but speaking anecdotally here, you know, for me, it's not like it feels like the title is any more important because I think they might have mentioned it once during the match that the winner of the series wins the title. So it doesn't really feel that much. The fact that they feel they've kind of been siloed off in their own little side of the, you know, AEW universe also feels like, you know, like its own thing. The fact it's been going on for a while now. All that, I think, adds into just establishing the fact that, you know, these are good athletes doing, you know, really, you know, athletic things. But I really would like to see them, you know, also meld in with other types of people in AEW. It does feel like, you know, it's separate from the rest of things, for better or for worse. You know, so me, I'm a little bit more on the cynical side, that it does feel more manufactured. The drama feels more manufactured. I'm still wondering where the hammer thing was supposed to go, or if it was going somewhere, because, you know, they dropped the whole hammer thing after, you know, for the last, I think, like two matches for the most part. So, you know, and the internal strife with the Death Triangle, that kind of went away. So, and, you know, and other little things that I would like, you know, if I were to nitpick, they brought up, Nick's leg injury from the previous match, which was, you know, which makes you think that, hey, you know, this is going to be carrying on over from the previous one. But, you know, immediately he does a move. He goes, oh, I guess he's all better. So some mm-hmm. stuff like that, I think there's some missed opportunities there to add more drama to it. But overall, I think it's just more that because of the whole my cynical view of it that I'm not as, you know, I'm more critical of it. But
yeah.
It's still fun. Like, it's still fun. But to me, it's like a Marvel movie that's not very deep, you know, compared to, like, you know, Citizen Kane, you know?
Yeah. No, fair enough. I will broaden it out even wider. And it was sort of built into my last question, but my last question was multi-layered. Are the Bucks bigger stars coming out of this? Is Kenny a bigger star coming out of this? Let's just focus on them. Even if you're cynical about why they did this, is this giving them some momentum coming out of it, having these showcase matches, doing what they do best or what they at least like to do most? And I think that's a fair description, especially of the Bucks. But, you know, obviously Kenny's known for singles matches, but this is not a bad way to come back into circulation either, in terms of showing what you can do.
I think it's more reestablishes them than you know, from their hiatus for due to the previous events, than really elevating them. Because I mean, we know this is the stuff they can do. If you've been following them for a while, you're not really being shocked by the matches that they're having. It would be more. They would have more of an impact if they were more involved in the general, you know, more involved in the AEW overall proper, I think. But I think this is more of an establishment of let's get past this, show off what we can do, and then maybe move on to something with more story than just saying, hey, look, it's just, you know, our booking is basically just we're going to have 7 matches.
Yeah, yep, fair enough. All right, well, let's pause and formally introduce ourselves and the show. And then we got a lot more to talk about when it comes to the final episode of Dynamite of 2022 and the end of an era, only because Excalibur said multiple times next week is a new era for AEW, including perhaps a new color scheme and a new, for sure, a new entrance set, maybe a new entrance theme song. I'm curious what they've got up their sleeve, what they've got planned. Tony trying to downplay it, but in the process of downplaying it, makes it sound like he'd like to not downplay it, but he figures if he doesn't, then people will say he didn't live up to expectations, which felt a little bitter, but also maybe true. So we can talk about that too. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, December 28th, 2022. And I am Wade Keller, the host of the program, following Dynamite tonight. And the other voice you hear is Javier Machado. He is a PW Torch contributor, a frequent contributor to these shows, often late in the show, creating a roundtable type segment with our co-hosts, and also often co-host for the full show, and that is what he's doing today. Javier, how is your holiday stretch going here?
Going well so far. Most been on vacation, although I go back to work tomorrow. So.
Do you feel recharged and ready or not?
Not really. I'm not a cold weather person. It's been 47 down here. I know people have been dealing with worse, but this.
I circled these 2 days, today and tomorrow, in the calendar because it's going to be 35 and 38, and I circled those days 2 weeks ago and planned all these things that I needed to do outdoors and getting out and about because it wasn't going to be zero or below zero for the first time in 2 weeks. So I won't say what I want to say, but go ahead.
Yeah, I've had some people bring that up online to me too. But, you know, it's just I tend to sleep in. I'm kind of like, you know, I've basically spent the entire time sleeping. I'm half asleep right now too, so it's going to be an interesting call. So because usually I get out of control when I'm drowsy. So.
Oh, fun. All right. Well, very good. I hope everybody listening had a great Christmas weekend and have a good and safe and warm, whatever warm is for you, New Year's weekend. I'm glad we had a, I think, it would you consider this an overall good episode of Dynamite?
Yeah, it was a fine episode. It was, you know, good.
Yeah, so we'll get into why we think that. I don't think it's a classic. I don't think we'll be remembering it and talking about it for years. I mean, there are certain things maybe people remember the spot at the end with Omega. But I did like Joe kind of getting a spotlight at the end of the show. So we got a lot to talk about. Let's give out the phone numbers and the email and encourage people who are listening on this holiday week to join us. It'd be fun if some people are off this week or have a chance to call when they normally don't if you're live streaming rather than listening to the I was going to say replay, but really just the standard download. If your schedule is different this week and you're listening live, we'd love to hear from you. Our number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. And the way it works is you call that number and then you push 1. When you push 1, that flags you on our switchboard so we know you want to be brought onto the show to contribute to the conversation. And we are here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, although it felt so weird we were not here this past Monday night. Raw did a best of show. I chose to not do a post show on a best of show. That would have been, it could have been fun. I mean, it certainly could have. We could have talked about great moments of the year, but took a rare Monday night off. But we are back here on Wednesday night. We'll be by Friday night for a very big episode of SmackDown. The subject of this week's Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter cover story, in fact, John Cena and Kevin Owens against Sami Zayn and Roman Reigns. And if you haven't read this week's newsletter yet online, if you're a VIP member, you can do so and check out the analysis of the context of this match, what it might mean, and kind of a big picture look at SmackDown viewership dating back to pre-pandemic and what might be expected or what they might draw on Friday. That is the newsletter that went up earlier today. The digital PDF and alt text version is on the VIP website and also on our Patreon page. If you are not a VIP member, you can subscribe. pwtorch.com/govip. That includes, what do we have here? This was issue 1804. So we've got around 1,800 back issues for you also when you sign up. So go VIP. Tons of archives of retro radio shows, hundreds of them from the 90s. Thousands, I think, at this point, of podcasts. I think that's easy to say. Thousands, for sure thousands of podcasts dating back almost 20 years now that we've been doing them. So, and new content every day and that is VIP exclusive. And then a nice bonus, ad-free and plug-free versions of this show. We remove the commercial interruptions and the in-house pre-recorded ads for a more streamlined listening experience for our members. And it is compatible, the full podcast feed, with Apple Podcasts and just about every podcast app out there. So go VIP, everybody, for the new year. $99 will get you a full year of access to 35 years of content and everything we do in 2023. I think it's a bargain for wrestling fans who like our brand of wrestling coverage. So check it out. If I didn't mention it, you can email us, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Either way works. Let us know what you thought of Dynamite. All right. Javier, should we start on phone calls?
Yeah, sure.
All right, cool. Let's see. We've got Chris from Mount Pearl, Newfoundland, and then after that in 203 area code is up second, so hold tight. Chris, it's been a while. Good to hear from you.
Gentlemen, how are we doing?
Did I call you
Newfoundland? It has been a while.
It's
Newfoundland. It's a balmy 20. Yeah, Newfoundland. You're close.
Oh, wait. Say it again. I want to get it right.
Well, so the way they say it here is Newfoundland, but they say it all together, so it's Newfoundland.
Okay. A little different than I was thinking and when I've been corrected on it. Yeah. All right.
It's like
cool.
It's like Canadian with an Irish accent in this province. It's quite amusing to listen to sometimes. Coming
great.
To you from a balmy 20 degrees Fahrenheit right now. So, Javier, you can just hush there for a bit. Yeah, that's great. it's been a while. It's late at night. We're in a weird time zone, but it is, as you
Sorry,
said, that weird
the
period
heat,
between Christmas.
The heat has to come
the
from
heat.
Somewhere. The heat has to come from somewhere.
I guess, yeah. It's supposed to rise, I thought, but up here in Canada we get nothing, so I guess you're just holding on to it. Let's talk about that six-man. I'm so torn on this. I've spoken a few times on these post-shows about my disdain for the style of match that the Bucks and the Lucha Brothers put on. I'm not sure if we're supposed to be calling them Lucha Bros anymore. I'll need Todd to clarify that on the next fix. But
Todd doesn't like it. He likes Lucha Brothers. So if you say Lucha Bros, it's almost like you're just trying to irritate him.
I mean, heaven forfend I should do such a thing. So the Lucha Bros really get on my nerves sometimes. But what we have here is a match with five of the most talented professional wrestlers in the world and Penta. And they start in a hallway. They brawl for a good 5 or 6 minutes doing absolutely nothing that we haven't seen before. And then they get in the ring and put on one of their less choreographed matches that actually kind of look good. But they completely went away from the hammer gimmick. They had the bit at the end with Kenny just being like, I don't care how important I am or how many people have disappeared or who's out injured. I'm going to be an idiot. And then jump off a very high thing. You had Phoenix looking incredible. I wish they weren't putting all these people in a six-man. But you touched on it. I think they are trying to make these titles more important than the Ring of Honor and, heaven forbid, the New Japan ones have been, you know, the New Japan ones that they forget exist until Wrestle Kingdom every year. And I think that the way they're doing that is to put these guys in these matches and have them go out there and just go all out. So I think if that's their goal, I'm okay with it, but they really don't have anywhere to transition. So what do you think is the future plan for these six-man titles or the trios titles or whatever the heck they are?
They are trios titles, and much to my chagrin. Javier, what do you think is next? Who wins the series, and is there an obvious team or two waiting? That's been the issue with six-man titles over the decades, is just there's not a lot of established three-man teams. Even in world-class championship wrestling, it was the Von Erickson, the Freebirds, and then some manufactured team of the season that didn't really feel, you know, serious a lot of the time.
I think the Elite end up with it. My guess is they kind of want to do what they did with the tag titles, which was to give them to Kenny Omega and Hangman Page and have them hold it for a while to try to, you know, build it up, you know, build up the title by having Kenny Omega hold it. I think this is kind of the similar thing. They're going to have your you know, because they're one of the better tag teams in the world, and Kenny Omega holding the titles to kind of raise the stakes. As far as opponents, I mean, outside of House Black Best Friends are about the only other two teams that are really exist out there. You know, or if they put together some sort of group from from the firm, you know, slap someone, you know, some of those people together, maybe some people from JS, although, you know, I think that Jericho just embarked on his feud with Ricky Starks, which will probably last until, you know, this time next year. I mean, that's the thing. It's like who's going to be their opponent? They are a star-studded team, but it's who, you know, who else is going to be out there? So I think, you know, if their thing is to try to make this almost as important as the tag team titles, I don't think that's going to work, because it's just with three-man titles, it's just, I just don't see it happening.
Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, I'm inherently against them because I don't understand what a three-man team can do realistically without being too contrived that a two-man team can't do. But I think if your plan is to elevate the titles, then yes, putting them on the Elite does that, but you need to have a follow-up. And House of Black's a good shout. I hadn't really considered them as an option. But outside of that, there is nobody even close to that level that you can have as a follow-up. So no matter how much you try, you know, if there's one thing we've learned over the past 20 years of wrestling history, it's that good matches alone do not make a successful wrestling promotion. Ask Ring of Honor, they'll tell you. So it kind of worries me, and it ties nicely into my next point, which is what happened at the end of the show with Wardlow and Joe. The monster face doesn't work, and the reason it doesn't work is because at some point he has to lose, and then he's not a monster anymore. So what we see tonight is Joe smack Wardlow twice with a pipe, which would put a mortal man out for a couple of weeks, and then Wardlow goes out there and has, I'll give him credit, a really good match with Samoa Joe, although if you can't have a good match with Samoa Joe, you should probably just retire. And then Joe still manages to win. Presumably this means Wardlow is moving on to bigger things, but he can't beat MJF. It's way too early. So now you have this monster face who lost because of a pre-match attack but still put up a big fight, and now he has nowhere to go. So if you're trying to elevate him, where does he go?
It is a bit of a conundrum. I was thinking about that with Joe against Wardlow. We had the pre-match attack with the pipe to give Wardlow an excuse for his leg giving out throughout the match to protect the monster babyface slot that Wardlow is in. There's no shame in losing to Joe, but there is some issues, as Chris pointed out, in that. Javier, how do you think they pulled it off, and what did this do for both Joe and Wardlow? I think it's definitely a co-top talking point coming out of the show.
Yeah, I mostly liked what they did, because they usually don't do this, is have the attack early on and have that sort of carry through to the show. And I say sort of because they talked about it for like the next like couple segments, and then they totally forgot about it. And then, you know, all of a sudden it's like, oh, you know, is he even going to come out? I think it would have been much better if they kept going back you know, just 15-second segment saying, you know, hey, you know, what's going on? You know, are we going to have a main event? Because you put the, you know, the main event for the show was in jeopardy, and we have no idea what's going on. And, it, you know, and they played it lip service during, the, I think, like the next match or two, and then, like, no more. So I would have liked to, you know, have that reinforced as this is going to be your big story for the show. You know, obviously that the knee injury was to give Wardlow an out. In terms of what you do next with him, I mean, unless you're, because I could see him have a program with MJF, it being the next one, since it looks like it's going to be Danielson and MJF, I don't think is, you know, going to be immediate. So maybe they sell the knee for a while and say that he's going to be out for a bit. Or if they don't do that, since it looks like Samoa Joe is pivoting over to Darby Allin as far as the TNT title is concerned, maybe the thing between Joe and Wardlow continues, but it continues over on ROH for the ROH title instead. So, you know, and so in one way, I think if he just, you know, they sell the injury to later set up him and MJF, I think that, you know, that's him moving up. Or if they don't have faith in him, because, you know, there's been obviously a lot of scuttlebutt that he's not as hot as he was since, you know, was it Full Gear? You know, and, you know, maybe they're going to take him off, you know, move on to something else to rehabilitate him, which would be the other option. I was surprised at how much of the people got into him in this match, but this was, I think, one of the better crowds I've seen in a while.
Yeah, this was a good crowd to end the year on. That it's such an important part with AEW. I'll go back. Well, no, I won't. I was going to bring it. Never mind. I think Wardlow is, you know, we talked on the flagship last week, Zach Hadorn and I did, about wrestlers to watch in 2023. And Wardlow and Samoa Joe didn't come up, but this episode of Dynamite brought them into that realm for me, because Tony Khan has a tough call when it comes to Wardlow, which is continue to push him as the monster babyface, as you brought up, Chris, and try to figure out a way to make that work within the way AEW presents and promotes their product, which isn't really based around that. There's not a lot of top stars that you can imagine, heels, that you can imagine working against Wardlow in a top program that AEW fans are going to want to watch, because the match style is not, it's not at the same level. It's different athletically. It tells a different kind of story. WWE has conditioned their fans to follow that kind of match, even if they are presenting a contemporary style. A lot of the time, I think WWE fans expect there to be that variation, kind of a Wardlow style match. I thought Joe and Wardlow had a good match. I thought it was one of Joe's better matches in a while. In fact, in part because I think it was one of his bigger challenges in a while, is to have a match where he's not the big guy surprising a smaller guy with his agility and catching him and hitting some power moves as a novelty, but the whole thing was built around power moves. And I thought he pulled it off. But I think Joe enters the list as a wrestler to watch in 2023 too, because, and I'm not saying he's going to become, you know, have become a top star in AEW, like a true top tier guy in AEW necessarily. You know, I don't know what top tier goes and how good a stretch he has. But this match, in the way he stood at the end and then having Darby came out, made me think he actually might finally have a productive year in AEW, where he's consistently in that top group of wrestlers who are given attention and tended to on a weekly basis, more often on Dynamite than Rampage. And the Joe that I've seen the last few weeks with the vignette seems like a refreshed and rejuvenated and motivated Joe with some direction. And I like that he won, and I like that it seemed like they pivoted away to Darby. And I'm hoping, Javier, that this is a sign, and that doesn't mean they have to bury Wardlow or anything, but that their priority right now is rightfully on getting something out of Joe in 2023 that more matches his track record and I think his potential when he's healthy. What do you think?
I agree with you, but my gut feeling is that they're going to use him to anchor ROH, mainly because I'm expecting this current storyline to be used to get Darby over. I'm expecting Darby to beat Joe for the TNT title, and then that, and then Joe to transfer over to ROH is pretty much my my feel for that.
Chris, back to you. What do you think?
I hope not. I mean, I was just thinking they need to get the ROH TV title off Joe, potentially to Brian Cage, because I would love to see that one-on-one. But I, Javier, I hope you're wrong, but unfortunately, you rarely are. I don't know where to go for my next point, because there's a few things I wanted to bring up. There was Wheeler Yuta actually not sounding like an adolescent boy with his promo. I thought he did pretty well. There's Ruby Soho continuing to make me wonder why she was a prized signing for AEW. And then there's why did they replay the Hangman Page backstage promo? I mean, it might not have been a replay, but it certainly seemed like one. They have this tendency, AEW has this tendency to take segments and run them into the ground. We saw it for weeks with the Britt Baker backstage with Toni Storm and Thunder Rosa, and then it was Britt and Saraya, and now it's Paige with the doctors. And it's almost like they get an idea, but they have no idea how to develop it. So whichever one of those you want to go with.
Sure. Let's start with Hangman. I did not like Hangman running in on the Battle Royal on Rampage on Friday. I think it's just a bad look for Hangman to be interfering in a match because he's mad that he got knocked out in a fight that Moxley pointed out was not a cheap shot. It's the goal of any wrestler to knock his opponent out in a fight. And then here Hangman is running into a match with high stakes, $300,000 on the line, and just, you know, can't get over the fact that Moxley knocked him out. I just think it's a bad look. I don't think it makes sense, and I think wrestling is always better when it makes sense. If you have fans cheering something that doesn't make sense, that doesn't validate it, it says you've got some goodwill with the fans, but you're probably also leaving some fans behind. So I didn't like that. And then, you know, Renee bringing up Moxley's name and Hangman standing up like, oh, you're going to bring up his name, huh? And that felt manufactured. Of course she's going to bring up his name. That's who you just attacked on Friday on Rampage. Why would you be upset with the interviewer accuse her of triggering you by bringing up his name? That's where the feud is. All that said, you know, they tease that he'll be cleared in 2 weeks in L.A. To take on Moxley in a rematch, and they're going to try to really load that show up. You know, at least they're laying the groundwork to build up to it. Javier, where are you on the Hangman journey right now and heading towards a one-on-one rematch with Moxley, where I don't think there's a reason to be emotionally, I'm not sure how AEW wants us to feel about Hangman, you know, if we're rooting for him to beat Moxley for reasons or not. I just don't think this has been a good look for Hangman since he's been knocked out.
Yeah, framework-wise, the framework of the story I don't really have a problem with. He wants to come back and, forgive the turn of phrase, but basically reclaim his manhood because he got knocked out, you know, mm-hmm. So in the middle of the match. So the framework of that is fine, but, I mean, it's not like Moxley is a character that would duck him. So it would work if Moxley, instead of Moxley, were like MJF, and MJF starts ducking him, and then, you know, he would attack him wherever he gets a chance to try to force the issue. But it's not like Moxley, you know, you just say, hey, Moxley, I'm going to fight you next week. And Moxley's like, okay, fine, let's fight. So him attacking at this point is, like, ridiculous. It makes no sense. He's a babyface, so he shouldn't be actually interfering in actual matches. I understand the framework. I understand what they're going for. Moxley is the wrong opponent to do this type of story in. And he's coming Hangman Page is coming across more as petty than as someone you want to see him, you know, reclaim his honor,
right,
so to speak.
Yes.
So, you know, and that's kind of the problem.
There's an obvious better way to have portrayed Hangman to build this match up than this way would be my response. However you feel about Hangman, you know, in the way he's acted and, you know, charging out, interrupting a battle royal and seeming petty. It's not like, well, they are in a corner and it's a best scenario to get out of a bad situation. No, I mean, you can have him just act, you know, normal, you know, like what you just described, Javier. It's like, I want my manhood back. I got knocked out. I'm embarrassed by it. It's a sport. It happens, but let me at him. And I think you can tell that story. And if you can't fill a bunch of segments with that being Hangman's approach, so be it. Like, then fill TV time with other things and just have Hangman for, you know, a month, talk about wanting to get back, and have Moxley go, you know, bring it on. I knocked you out once, I'll knock you out again. I just think people like to see a fight, but they don't want to see a petty babyface who misinterprets being knocked out in a fight as something he needs to avenge, but by anything other than waiting for a bell to ring on an official rematch. And so I think Hangman's character has looked bad since that incident.
No, and then you could save the whole story that he told about him, you know, not remembering his child's name for when you're like at the last, because I mean, that's heavy. Save that for the last promo before the actual fight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and as to add, you know, add more sauce to the story, as opposed to saying, oh, this is, you know, because they instead try to use it. This is why I want to get revenge, is because you made me forget my son's name. And I'm like, I can understand somebody being angry over that. But again, you are in a sport, you know, where you're trying to knock the other guy out. So, you know, because I defended like on the first day, because on the first day people were like already like, oh, why is he attacking? I'm like, look, he just wants to reclaim, you know, he wants to reclaim his honor. But, you know, after that, the continual like going on with it, I think they're trying to play into the whole millennial cowboy gimmick, but I don't know. But, you know, a lot of times, you know, saying millennial is, you know, bringing up that is like, you know, meant as an insult for, you know, you know, and acting in, you know, like that. So I don't get what they're going for, because he's not someone that I want to actually cheer for. And it's putting Moxley in a bad position. Thing aside, the whole, you know, which I it's been really annoying me, the whole Blackpool Combat Club being into violence and stuff like that, when, you know, and talking about like, we like to fight, but then we also like taking, they're trying to be villains and also honorable fighters at the same time. That doesn't really jive with me. But in the position that he's in, like, what does he do? What does Moxley have now to play off against with what Hangman Page is doing? You know, so because they obviously don't want him to go full heel. But then at the same time, like, you know, I don't know what they're going for. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. How about Ruby Soho? How'd you feel about her tonight, Javier? Didn't jump out to me as a bad performance from her. But, I mean, I think we've learned she's not the answer to AEW's, you know, top-tier women's depth chart vacancies or you know, the shallowness of it. But, I mean, considering who she was in the ring with, I thought it was a solid effort.
Yeah, I thought this was pretty much the best match of everyone I don't remember the ROH one with Willow, but I think it might have been the best match they've all had. I mean, that's not a very high bar to clear. Where, you know, I was even impressed by Jay. So, you know, which has not, you know, not impressed, but like not, you know, what's going on here. Let me tone that phrase back a little bit, but you know, I thought it was fine. I was expecting the match to be a train wreck from the get go, and I didn't think it was a train wreck. Maybe it was like low expectations, but yeah. I thought it was fine. I don't think it you know, it's not a 5-star match, but you know, I thought it was okay.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was too. Oh, well, Chris, I'll throw it back to you. I know you brought up something else, and we only covered two out of the three things, so you can follow up on anything we said or remind us of the third thing.
Yeah, so real quick, Wheeler Yuta was the one. I thought his promo was pretty good. With Ruby, she just always seems like she's a step behind everyone. I didn't like the closing sequence of the match either. I thought the throwing the chair and then the pump kick, it was just too many pauses in there. And then the finisher, that ridiculously contrived thing, it looked so off, and a lot of that's on Ruby. But, you know, that's fine. I'm glad you brought up the Hangman Page motivation, because I've been hearing you talk about this for a couple of weeks and I've never been able to call in, but I think his biggest motivation is not that Moxley knocked him out. It's that Moxley knocked him out, caused that concussion, and then Moxley never bothered to check on him. And I wish he had just said that, because that would have made a difference. If he could have said, this is a violent business, but we never go out to try and hurt each other or put each other's careers in danger. We want to win matches, not end people's careers, and you almost ended mine, and you never bothered to ask me how I was doing. That would have given him much more motivation and made the whole thing make sense. And Moxley still could have shrugged his shoulders and said, it's not ballet, what do you want from me? So I'm really, like, that's what I think has been missing from that whole storyline is just that one simple sentence. And Wade, you've said so many times with AEW, they just seem to be missing that one connecting tissue that makes the entire thing make sense. And it would be so simple to do it, and they just don't. And I think that one line could have just made all the difference in this entire thing. What do you think on that?
I could imagine Moxley saying, no, don't make me out to be, you know, this jerk who doesn't call people who get hurt in the ring with me. And so maybe something like that is at play where it's like, well, we got to protect Moxley's character. That said, you said it, Chris. He could go shrug his shoulders and go, yeah, that's just not the type of person I am. I don't wish you ill will. I hope you're a good dad to your kid, and I want, you know, and all that. But, you know, I won the match, and it wasn't a cheap shot. What do I, you know, you're fine, and that happens. And I was out with an injury, and, you know, my opponents didn't call me, and I didn't think twice about it. Get over it. But, yeah, it, in a way, that's the peril of having two baby faces with different, even if they have different perspectives on the business, you can put the fans in a situation where they're having to choose between two people that they want to like, which is one of the downsides of just how often AEW does this. With Hangman, it's just his character writes itself. You put him against heels, and you have him cut earnest but cool, straightforward promos. He's talented at that in a way that most baby faces aren't. And not to pick on Wheeler Yuta, but there's more Wheeler Yutas than there are Hangman Pages out there in terms of, you know, inspiring, look at the camera, and get a whole wide range of fans excited to see you get revenge. And I just think keeping it simple when you have someone who's a talented talker like Hangman is better. And I think Mox is better when he's knocking people out and feuding with people who you want to see him knock out and take out. And that's not Hangman. And they've stretched this thing out for months needlessly just because of an unplanned finish. And sometimes it's better to just move on than to spend months trying to tie a ribbon around something. Javier, back to you.
Yeah, there are many different ways you can go. I mean, it's a good start, what you brought up with, you know, saying that you didn't check up on me. That would be a good start. I still don't think it forgives the continual hunting. Like, the first attack would be fine. The continual hunting is still, like, a bit much. But if Moxley could play off on that, say, yeah, well, I don't care about you. I mean, this is, you know, I don't care about my opponents and how they end up. It wasn't intentional, but, you know, not going to check up on you, and then that become a thing, and then, like, maybe he could start pushing at that point a little bit more heelish, because you kind of want to, you know, push people one direction or the other, maybe a little bit more heelish, and just, you know, in a way that signposts that he wants to get more out of, that he's excited to face Hangman Page, that it's an opponent that excites Moxley, and Moxley then starts, you know, purposely turning the screws on Hangman Page to try to up the violence of Hangman Page. That could be something they could have done. Maybe that's what they're trying to do, but the pieces are kind of scattershot and not really, you know, they haven't really hit that yet.
Chris, I think what you said is better than what they're doing. Let me be clear on that, for sure. And I'm just sort of, you know, going, should they even be doing this? But if you're going to do it, her way is better than whatever they're trying to do here. And Javier, what you just said too, or, you know, variation of it, having Hangman just go, you know what, I got taught a lesson by Moxley in that match. I let my guard down. I didn't take into consideration, my circumstances. I was thinking about my game plan as opposed to defending against his, and I'm going to be a better wrestler, I'm going to be a more ferocious wrestler. I'm going to be more vicious. I'm going to have a better game plan going forward. Just a sports-like explanation for it without resentment for Mox. Now, that said, he could say under his breath, hey, a text or a phone call would have been nice. But that's about all I think he should do. Like, enough where people go, well, okay, I don't blame Mox, but I can understand Hangman thinking that would have been nice. But not make that the centerpiece that both guys are hitting hard on, because I think both can kind of look petty. But if it gets brought up in passing and maybe the announcers talk about it more than Hangman and Mox, that gives you something better than what they're doing now, for sure. It boils down to just get Hangman against a more appropriate opponent and get Mox against a more appropriate opponent so that they can do what they do well. And so fans can be cheering their every word and getting behind them, kicking some ass. And we're in this weird, it's sort of a dream match between two very different personalities who are both baby faces, but it's not being presented or framed with the high stakes that a dream match should. So it's an exception to the rule that I think underperforms and more confuses than I think motivates fans to tune in and be invested in it. And you're right on Wheeler. We didn't get the cracking voice and the complaining, which was nice. It was more dignified. It was. I don't have a lot to say about it because it just sounds like we're picking on him. But, I mean, it is worth noting his promos have been pretty awful, and this was not a good promo, but at least it wasn't, sort of, like, embarrassing. Anyway, anything else, Chris, you want to bring up?
No, I will leave you there. I'm sure there's people in the queue waiting to get on. I will just add that I have no idea who we're talking to and where they are because there was no jingle, and that's quite depressing. So, we should definitely have a jingle, even for the co-host. I think they deserve a jingle if one exists. Yeah, just throwing that out there.
Thanks,
Chris.
Thanks, folks. Have a happy new year.
You too.
Happy New Year. Javier, does it feel wrong if you don't hear the jingle before you start talking?
I'm not going to lie.
All right, there you go.
Okay.
That's all you got.
That's fun. Just a couple,
a couple notes, yep.
Yeah.
A couple people dropped off while we were talking to Chris. So phone lines are clear. So push one or give us a call. 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558, 203 and 415 if you dropped off because you didn't want to hold on. I get it. But if you're still listening, give us a call back. Or if you're listening now, call and push one. We got an email on the Wardlow match. I want to go to this because we were talking about it a minute ago. Chris Fielder in Truth or Consequences, New Mexico, says, I have just one point to make. That Wardlow clothesline where he kind of looks like an inflatable tube man makes me cringe. That may be the dumbest looking move in all of wrestling. Please help my crusade to make Wardlow stop this nonsense. Hope you're having a good holiday season. That specifically, and Wardlow style in general, Javier, who do you compare him to? Do you like what he's doing ring style-wise?
This might be the first match of his that I could actually say that I liked. mainly because of the selling of the knee for the most part, with the exception of two moments. One was that springboard thing that he did to the corner. I understand that, in a lot of matches, especially in New Japan stuff, the idea is that the adrenaline takes over. But the story of the match is that they wrecked his knee, man. For him to do a springboard off of the knee. I think it was last week, with Dick Jackson, with his injured knee, he did a springboard, but he obviously just leapt off of the one knee. I know Wardlow can't do it, so just don't do that spot if that's the story you're going to try to tell. And then when he did went for the second powerbomb, he went for the wrong knee, and then he's like, oh, and then he went to the other one. So, that was the two moments on that. But I don't know. It's hard. Like a modern version of Steiner, I think, if you take Steiner and like move into modern days, but like greener.
But Scott had that really athletic stretch. Where he wasn't just going to be the over-muscled power move guy who can surprise you with some athleticism. He was just the super athlete. He was more.
Well, he reminds me.
Chad Gable, Kurt Angle.
Yeah, he. That was early on, but my experience with Steiner was like when he was in that middle spot where he was bulking up. Which is why it reminds me of, because that was like my biggest experience with Scott Steiner, where I'm like, man, this guy might be getting a little bit too big for what I kind of remember him used to do. But that's like the Scott Steiner that's like burning my mind. It's like right before Big Papa Pop, but not, so that's where I think like why Wardlow kind of reminds me of, but like a much greener and unfinished version of that. That's like the one that came to mind because.
Yeah. Well, I'll use the line that Todd loves. What is the best case scenario in the context, in the spirit of the question that, in, that I mean that, for Wardlow over the next year or two? And going back to kind of what I said about AEW and the style that fans expect, and is he a good novel variation of it, or is it just not a great fit, especially with the other talent?
I mean, it's weird because sometimes he comes – I mean, and I feel really bad because, I mean, he was hot because of the storyline that he was involved in with MJF. And then everything went awry thanks to that post-show scrum. No, sorry. Give me 1 second. Sorry.
Yeah, no problem.
So, no, it was – sorry, it was the MJF, the drama with MJF and the whatever was going on behind the scenes, and that killed the wind of his, out of his sails, because at that point when he squashes MJF, you didn't get the release of like, oh, you know, he's finally, you know, destroying his opponent. Your mind is going to like, well, MJF is out of here, so that's why they're squashing him. So it never really gave an ending to that story, and I think that, you know, and I mean that's pretty much obvious that's started the decline on what he was doing. And then, like, you listen to the audience, and some audiences were really cold with him, and like today they were super hot. The people in the, you saw the crowd like losing their minds over him, and at least in the first couple of rows. There's potential there. Best case scenario, I think he does end up getting a match with MJF for the title, but not successful. Worst case, like I said, he probably ends up in ROH to feud with Joe for a while. And, you know, they basically, you put him in the back burner and then warm him up later.
Is that really worst case, Javier? Sorry, I'm channeling Todd.
You were just waiting for that. That's pretty much where I think, I'm thinking that they're probably going to want to get an MJF rematch at some point. I just don't see it happening like soon, because I mean, you got Danielson for the next pay-per-view.
Yeah. Speaking of Danielson, let's talk about that opening match with All Ego Ethan Page, Stokely Hathaway in his corner. Danielson wins in about 17 minutes. My take on this is it was a good match. It was the level you'd expect from these two. It was probably the biggest match of Ethan Page's career. I don't know if he'd agree with that, but I mean, from an audience level, opponent, and the opponent he's facing and the TV time he got, I just thought he delivered. You know, it's not match of the year, but it was like really good. And I think they're using him in just the right way. And he showed in this match that he can hang with Bryan Danielson. There's nothing really flashy about Ethan Page, but he's just good. He's like that starting quarterback on a playoff NFL team who doesn't rack up a ton of stats, but he doesn't lose games for you even if he's not winning games for you. And you have a winning record even if he's not flashy and you know, just – well, anyway, I made this guy sound super average. You know what I'm saying? Like, but somehow he just does the right thing and helps and doesn't get in the way of other players doing their thing. And then you add a good upper mid-card, lower top-tier kind of heel persona who can rebuild after losing. This is just a good slot for him, and I think it was good use of him. How about you?
Yeah, he knows how to work the crowd. I think that's the most important thing. And he's got a big enough personality to do it. And I was a huge fan of him when he was on Impact. And, you know, and very creative in a lot of the stuff that he did during the no crowd time, you know, where they were, well, not only no crowd, I think they were still in Canada, you know, filming, you know, I can't believe I forgot what we used to call them, you know, but filming like little, like, you know, vignettes and stuff. So I really like him a lot. And I think the fact that he's gotten a push might also have to do, by push, I mean being visible and getting a lot of airtime, might have something to do with, like, you know, I believe I read, and correct me if I'm wrong, that Miro was, he basically took over a role that they offered to Miro, and Miro turned it down because Miro didn't want to lose, supposedly. And he was put into that spot, and ever since he's been getting a lot more screen time, essentially doing, you know, that build, you know, gets a couple wins under his belt and then loses when they get someone over. I really enjoy him. And I kind of hope that he also gets like gets a little something, down the road.
Yeah. Yep. What do you think about Danielson in this match and where Danielson is heading into the main event world title feud with MJF? Because MJF was, you know, smirking and chomping on gum and insulting the crowd from the skybox level during this match. Is the timing right for Danielson to be heading into the spot early next year?
Yeah, I don't think well, it's funny because when he came out, the Chiron said that he's won 4 of his last 5 matches. So I wanted to check out what they were, what his recent record was. And, well, he going from most recent to he won against Dax Hardwood. He lost to Jericho in a 4-way for the ROH title. He won with Claudio against Jericho and Guevara. He won against Guevara. He won against Guevara, but then he lost against Jericho. Lost against Jericho and Guevara, won against Matt Menard, and lost against Moxley. So it kind of felt like the whole, you know, one of the last 4 of his last 5 matches was more like, hey, don't complain when we put him up against MJF. Felt more of one of those, you know. And I don't think he is, like, even as hot as he was when he was, like, at the end of his WWE run. And I think that might be on purpose. I don't think he's beating MJF. So I don't think they want to get people super hyped up into him more than they already are, because I don't think he's winning. So
yeah. But you want to create – don't you want to create a sense he might? I mean, ideally, you want a match where fans are like, I can't imagine either guy losing, not, well, clearly MJF's just getting started and Danielson is just, you know, the second guy for him to knock down.
Yeah, I think that if you do that when you get closer to the actual event, because there's still some time. I'm not sure. I didn't check how long from now is the pay per view, but and I wouldn't be, and hey, this is MJF, so I wouldn't be surprised if we get the like 5 trials of of Danielson also when we're you know on our way here, on our way to that match.
Yeah. I mean, it's weird with Dak saying on his podcast, like, CM Punk didn't want to be world champ. He just wanted to have fun. That's like, that's what people in, like, TNA said, you know, when they, like, the big name, oh, we're just, you know, well, not, I don't know if it's a perfect parallel, but it's like, no, you should want to show up to make it, you know, to make a real big difference and be the centerpiece. And I don't know, the, you know, the context and the mood Punk was in when he said that. But Danielson's sort of given off that vibe. I think even maybe more than Punk, which is, I think I said that
like week one that he was in there, that there's something about Danielson that he doesn't seem engaged with actually putting the company over. He is working hard with the actual wrestlers to get the actual individual wrestlers over. I think that he wants to give to the next generation, I think is like the main goal that he has, which is why I was surprised that he's going for the title right now. I think that was more like, you know, Tony needed somebody to go for the title, and Danielson's someone that can do that. But I have felt for the longest time that he's not someone who's engaged in going after titles and stuff, and just wants to put on good matches and with opponents he's never had before, preferably younger opponents, so that he could, you know, A, experience them, and B, get them over.
I want Danielson in the next couple months to make me believe he wants to be champion. You know, I mean, and not in a lip service, I got to say this, so I'll say it, but I got a little smirk because, you know, I don't mean it. Like, I want to feel that he feels the need to become AEW champion and convince us that this could happen and tell a story about MJF's time will come if he sticks around and he'll be champion again. But in my first title match, I'm going to end his title reign. And if he wants to try to beat me, you know, let's plan for that in 2025, because I want to have a long title reign and I want to go out on top. And MJF's going to have to work his ass off to be the guy who ends my title reign. And it's not going to be anytime soon. I want one of those promos. I want him to convince me and everybody the MJF thing was nice. It was a way to test things with him in a world champion position. But he's not going to be the long-term guy, and I've got a couple years of that in me. And tell that story and paint that picture, and don't be scared as a promoter. You're creating a rosy picture that fans are going to be super let down that you're not doing, because MJF is champion, as a heel champion, is going to work just fine. But when you're trying to sell a pay-per-view, make people believe they're going to see a historically significant title change. And Danielson's got to show up and make that case, as opposed to, you know, some, well, everyone knows I'm losing and I'm going to pay lip service to this match and, you know, it'll be good and I'm part of the MJF story. Like, that's not getting everything you can out of Danielson.
Yeah, and I'm sure that he will have that one promo that you're going to remember, you know, along the way there. But I think I think it's like building the structure over a long period of time is what he's, you know, where it actually feels real. That's how I felt with the whole twice with the whole Drew McIntyre situation in WWE, both leading into that WrestleMania that I despise, and the show in Cardiff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the show in Cardiff. So, you know, both were two moments that, like, they're like tailor-made moments, and like you kind of feel like dejected over that. And I think this is going to be more like along the lines of like when we get closer, he's going to get that one promo, probably talking about like, you know, I've been world champion before and I feel the burn again. And then he'll get his excited, like, you know, instead of it being like, because right now he feels low key. He just feels low key,
yep.
You know, and his promos and everything and not with the energy and the fire that he normally has. I think that he'll bring it out at some point when we get closer to the match, but I don't think he's going to, like, you know, it's going to be like he'll have the promo for the pay-per-view, but I think until then it'll be more kind of like, you know, what we're seeing right now.
Yeah. Yep. What are the odds Danielson ends MJF's reign? All things considered, let's say you have to incorporate into it MJF suffers an injury where he can wrestle, but he needs to take time off afterwards, or he has another argument with Tony Khan, or it's part of the plan, or Danielson gets red hot. Like, all these unlikely but alternate scenarios, do they add up to 5% or 30% of Danielson being the champion coming out of that match?
I mean, short of an injury, short of MJF injury, but as he said, I think he tweeted out that this year he wrestled 7 times, not expecting to work as much as next year. So short of something along those lines, or like, you know, Hollywood comes calling and they give him a role of a lifetime and he leaves wrestling. So, you know, so short of something like that, 95% chance that he retains. I just don't see it be Danielson to dethrone him.
Let's move on to the Moxley Top Flight match. Claudio Moxley winning this one. Did Top Flight come out of this bigger stars, or did they come across as jobber to the stars?
Pretty much jobber to the stars for me, for the most part. It's kind of what you expected. They're going to put on a really good match, and it pretty much, you know, that's pretty much it. And, you know, they use a lot of those, moves going from one, I don't know how to describe them, but like moves, you know, the sequence of moves, which the, you know, from one to one, that, which a lot of teams don't do that anymore in case of the Young Bucks. They showed some stuff, but it, you know, with the injury issues that Darius has had, I'm pretty sure they're going to end up getting pushed, but I think it's smart for them, you know, start small. I wouldn't be surprised if they start getting built at some point for something bigger. And this is just more like a get a taste of what Top Flight can do.
Yeah. How do you feel about Dante with Darius back? Better or worse off in terms of, you know, where he fits in?
The problem with Dante was that his stuff was so much start and stop, where he would, they would seem like he was, you know, they were getting behind him a lot, and then like he'd disappear, and then they'd get behind him again, and then he'd disappear, and, you know, that happens so much. I think right now stability is important. and just, have him. He also feels more, seems more comfortable, you know, in the role with the tag team right now. So I'm like, just have them, and they need tag teams too. Sorry. They need tag teams too. So, you know, people, you know, that to really, you know, get over right now. So I think just, you know, have them be essentially the next Acclaimed is what I would do. Just build them up to be the next, you know, Acclaimed. See if you explode on that, on the level that Acclaimed did.
Oh, speaking of which, I mean, we could have led with this. The Acclaimed video, a response to Sanjay Dutt's rap last week. I think more effort went into that video than any, you know, match planning this week. And, I mean, there were some lines like, Jeff Jarrett, you're the worst Jeffrey since Dahmer. You're spending money like it's Kurt Angle's wife. He said Lethal was ROH's top star from their worst years. And that all he is known for is imitating other wrestlers. What'd you think, and what stood out to you?
My thoughts were, is this way to be ring fed? particularly the Jeff Jarrett stuff, because that was like, I'm like, Wade's getting a kick out of this. Yeah, I mean, it was. I mean, some of the stuff there was stiff. I am a fan of, I've been a big fan of Impact. I don't hate Jeff Jarrett, and I liked Lethal when he was doing the machismo and the Black Machismo and the Ric Flair impersonation. So I have fond memories of that. So, you know, some stiff shots, not Impact, they were TNA at the time, TNA's way. But, you know, the bad times were the Hogan years. So the Hogan and Bully Ray, and that was the dark times for me.
Did you watch Rampage on Friday?
No, I missed it.
Okay, you missed Billy Gunn once again, you know, being in a match with younger wrestlers and just, like, getting all the big spots. And then, as Todd put it in the fix this week, you know, slips on a banana peel at the end to do the job. Yeah, I still am trying to figure out the chemistry with Billy Gunn and the Acclaimed, and if fans are really into it, and if so, why, and if Bowens and Caster really think Billy's giving them a rub, or do they kind of realize this is sort of Hogan with Hall and Nash? If you'll, you know, excuse the out of proportion, you know, comparison, the problems with that comparison, because obviously the NWO was massive, but, you know, the older guy seeing a hot act and glomming onto them, which to me is what this more feels like. But I do think there are fans who have a soft spot of a certain generation who have more of a soft spot for Billy Gunn than people of a who watched longer, or I don't know. So, how do you feel about Billy Gunn and the Acclaimed?
I love Billy Gunn. and you know, the thing is, what a lot of analysts miss is, and I think that not just in terms of wrestling, but also like entertainment in general, is I think that right now the audience, there's a desire for absurdist humor. And that's pretty much what this falls in. We're basically saying that Billy Gunn has left his actual children to adopt the Acclaimed, who are now his children. And they act like they're father and son, father and kids. This is absurd. This is ridiculous. And I find it hilarious. Because it's absurd. It's something that's beyond, that goes beyond the pale. And I think there's an appetite for a lot of people for that kind of humor. And I think that that's what's connected with them more than anything. And I think that adds on to also the fact that the Acclaimed, you know, also have a charisma. They're also good in the ring. They're entertaining on the mic. I think all that stuff, because I do think that Billy Gunn is a big part of that act getting over, is because I think it's that level of absurdist humor that, you know, that really buoyed them up. Now, the problem with absurdist humor is that there's some people who are really turned off by that. I mean, really turned off by that and like hate it. So, you know, but you got to, at some point you have to court one kind of audience if you're going to, you know, want to get that extra, you know, explosion.
Yeah. I mean, you could say a lot of people are acts to watch in 2023. the Acclaimed 2023 is a big year for them because are they going to be, excuse the expression, but one-hit wonders? Is this going to be kind of, oh, the season of the Acclaimed, the quarter four of 2022? And then it just, you know, it subsides into something less. Not that they just completely go away or they're broken up or they're jobbing, but it's just something less, and this is sort of, you know, a hot run, and then that was it. Or do they build on this? And it's an interesting choice for AEW and Tony Khan. I don't know if choice is a word, but Caster and Bones are so different than so many other acts. They're not indie darlings. They're not stars acquired from WWE or for that matter, ROH or TNA or New Japan. Or PWG, like they're a true homegrown gimmick and wrestlers who didn't have anything near the acclaim of so many others before they appeared on AEW TV. And then their act is different because it's about Caster's rap and catchphrases, not great work, but they're good enough in the ring to not stand out as being a lot less than that. What do you think? What do you think 2023 will be like for them?
Well, it's the idea of the one trick pony thing. As long as they're able to add to it, and I don't mean like add like if you're just tossing more toppings on there. I mean like develop it, you know, and have it, you know, continue to develop it. You could do it. I mean, that was essentially what got the Young Bucks over. The Young Bucks and the stuff they were doing on BT on Being the Elite, you know, that led to the creation of AEW was absurdist humor. When Adam Cole went to NXT, Kenny Omega had him killed. And you know, they did jokes with that, and it was like, you know, it was like incredible, ridiculous thing. But the thing is that they always kept reinventing and like changing and creating like a story out of it. And as long as they can actually, the Acclaim can continue developing what they're doing, they can stay on top. The thing is, you know, you don't want to become like, you know, late stage Degeneration X, where you're doing the cross chop and, you know, and saying the specific lines, bringing it back to Billy Gunn, that's the thing. You gotta find a new angle to the gimmick, new things, and that also depends on who your opponent's gonna be.
Was I just going to bring – oh, you know what? I do want to bring up no one else – by the way, no one else has chimed in on the phone line. So if you do want to jump in on any of the topics we brought up, please do so. I was holding out hoping we would hear also from Audrey, who I got back to late because of the Christmas holiday, but they were attending tonight. We're going to be our on-site correspondent, but I don't see them showing up here either. So, Javier, I want to bring up the Ricky Starks segment. Behind the scenes, or the backstage promo, promoting his match with Jericho next week. It to me, I like the maturity of the promo in the sense of I'm not going to try to top what I've done before. I'm going to cut a straightforward promo that just solidifies and frames what's already been established, and I'm going to be cool but not desperate. I'm not trying to get have the quote of the week or get a social media buzz going for some snarky thing that I say. I'm just going to cut a good babyface promo aimed at a veteran heel who's underestimating me, and I like that.
Yeah, I'll even say you undersold it. I mean, I really like last week's promo. More impressed with this week's promo because – last week's promo was a swing and a home run. I mean, and not as big of a home run as his thing with MJF, but it was still a really good promo. So we're going to have to call it, he hit a home run. But not every single time you're at bat, you need to swing to hit a home run, because you have those promos. But then there's also the nail, you know, hit the nail on the head promo, and that's what he did here and did it in a really good way. He confronted what Jericho said. Didn't you guys talk about that in the fix about promos where they went back and forth, but they weren't like standing in front of each other?
Yes.
That's exactly what this was. because he talks about how, because Jericho finished his promo earlier on, which was good too, and fine, and like not super over the top, so, you know, like he could get, so that was good. And he finishes saying that, you know, by saying that the Ricky Starks experiment ends, which I a little bit meta in terms of like, you know, but,
right.
but enough where, you know, where it's like this guy's been given a shot, you know, by management, and I'm going to end the experiment to show that he doesn't belong. So that fits with that. And then Ricky Starks answering that with, you're not going to end the Ricky Starks experiment because there's no experiment. So completely undercutting his character, saying, you know, his argument saying that, you know, I'm here to stay. And just like, you know, the way that he countered the stuff that Jericho said, and also, you know, he showed confidence, because that's another thing that very rare, you know, a lot of times when, you know, you hear promo in WWE and less in AEW, but where you're told to exude confidence, it comes across as like arrogance. And this was just confidence. He showed confidence as opposed to arrogance. So I thought it was really well done. And I thought, you know, if he could continuously hit these kind of promos as well as the big, more bombastic ones like he did last week, I mean, you know, he doesn't even need to wrestle. You know, he doesn't, as long as he doesn't, you know, poop the bed, as they say, you know, you've got a star.
I agree. And I mean, I didn't mean to undersell it. It's weird that you know, I don't like, but I can see where someone would think, oh, you're underselling it by not saying it's great. But you know, like, it's great because it embodies what I want from wrestling promos. And it's weird because I'm complimenting, you know, the buzz generating rap from the Acclaim, but that's their gimmick. That's what they are. But Starks, that was a mature main event, poignant response to Jericho that did not cede any ground to him. And I'm really impressed by that. And I don't know his contract status with AEW. I don't know where he would land in WWE. So much of where you land in WWE has to do with who your friends are and how you navigate politics. And is, you know, does Paul Levesque believe in you? And what's their first impression of you? And is there any baggage? You know, I mean, I know he was in that WWE skit way back where Ryback, you know, smashed him through a table in a backstage skit. I don't know if they have a lot of memories of him otherwise. But he just seems like somebody who can be a star. This promo made me believe in him more tonight than I had going into tonight, because it was such an efficient use of the time he was given. And so every word counted. And like I said, he didn't cede any ground to Jericho, and Jericho is a megastar, and I thought he said all the right things. I just thought it was a real high IQ babyface promo, and frankly, it's what Hangman Page should have been doing more of these past few years at various times when he had momentum. And I know there are different things that kind of interrupted it, but when he was healthy and around, that's the kind of promo. I just think this was a template for a lot of people to look at.
And give kudos to Jericho also, because I spoke well of him last week, because, you know, he ceded the ring. I mentioned that he ceded the ring to Starks, and in this one he actually talked about the asshole line, and you know, in a way that's like, oh, that was good, like, you know, admitting that it stung, that it got to him, and you know, let, you know, essentially selling in his promo to Starks, to, you know, and also, you know, reminding the audience about that, because they're not in front of the audience now, so that, you know, maybe this becomes the chant next time that they come out, you know? So, you know, kudos for him to also playing on to what happened previous week and using it to, you know, get over what Stark said.
Yeah, yep. Were anything else from tonight's Dynamite that jumps out to you that you want to either follow up on or bring up that I haven't?
Well, the production. This is what I was hoping, you know, for. I don't know if it's who's the guy they hired. I don't know if it's
I can't remember his name right off.
Michael Mansory. I don't know if it's his influence or not, but the fact that They, before going into specific skits, they gave you a very brief 15-minute video. 15 minutes. Very brief 15-minute video. A very brief 15-second video recapping what was important about what you're about to watch. Doesn't need to be a long thing. It's just it reinforces what you saw last week.
Yep.
Even if you remember what you saw last week, it reinforces the highlights, and it's like you're picking off where you left off. So they did that before the Swerve segment. They did that before several different segments in order to, you know, that's all you need to do, like 15 seconds. And they've been doing that more often, and it was noticeable today, and I think it enhances what you're about to watch. Instead of, because before it just felt like they pointed the camera at the ring and said, go wrestle.
Yep.
And we're going to put on chyrons, and that is our production value. You know,
exactly.
This,
yep.
You know, so this felt more like, let's pay attention, you know, it enhances, your experience for, you know, and makes what you're about to watch feel more important.
Next week is a new era. Your last point on tonight's Dynamite is a perfect lead into what I wanted to pivot to, which is the new look of the show. I mentioned earlier Tony Khan's kind of saying, oh, I don't want to play it up too much because then it, you know, people think it's a letdown. But I think just by him saying it, it's a way of saying I'm tempted to say this is going to be great, and or you know a real big significant refresh. Excalibur calling it a new era without being any more specific. Is kind of, I think, laying the groundwork for expectations to be, you know, I don't think necessarily they're saying storyline-wise. I think they're just saying it's a new year, and it's going to be a new look and feel and vibe. And I hope some of the things you pointed out are, in fact, deliberate and things that they felt they couldn't wait to do to make the show better, but that they have some other ideas that will then be combined with a whole new graphics package to go along with an intro theme song, entrance stage, color scheme, ring apron, ringside barricades, and perhaps even shaking up the Excalibur speed talking plugs. That's asking a lot, but I think there are other ways to present pro wrestling, including in the spirit of what AEW represents and what it wants to be. And I'm excited to see it. I think aesthetics count. I think there are people who, not everybody, but some people go to restaurants because the food is good and the atmosphere is great and will forego going to a restaurant where the food is better, but the atmosphere is drab. And AEW has a lot going for it. And I did not at all mind the set 3 years ago. I thought it worked. But I think there is absolutely room for a refresh, as is the case, you know, with anything. People, you know, rearrange their furniture every few years just to kind of get a fresh look at things. I think they were due, and I'm curious if this kind of red and blue laser, or I don't even know what to call it, but the look that they've teased for next week is a sign of what we're going to get. Javier, what's your take, and have you picked up on anything else in terms of what to expect next week?
Well, you stole what I was about to say, that if you watch the little new promo thing that they did, lots of straight lines and, heavy into like the neon lasers and stuff. I'm expecting it to look like Space Mountain, essentially. That's kind of like what I'm thinking the look of it's going to be, with all like neons, like neon pinks, and it's going to look, you know, I think that's what they're going for. Maybe like, you know, like...
Is that good or bad?
I mean, for me, I love it because I'm like a child of the early 90s and like Max Headroom and stuff. You know, that works for me. I'm 40 and maybe you want a younger demographic. 40 plus, and maybe you want a younger demographic, but that fits, you know, that fits that, you know. So, I mean, I'm looking forward to the look. I think there was even some – I noticed some of the graphics also looked like not the way I remember them
yeah.
when they were showing stuff for next week with like whites,
yeah.
you know, and more stark. So I think we've already seen some clues. I doubt there's going to be much changes in terms of the how they're going to promote stuff, because they still need to promote the next, you know, 1 year's worth of stuff that they're doing in like 5 seconds. But
there are other ways to do that. There really are. Honestly, even if it's a two-thirds, one-third screen where there's a graphic that has a match that's just moving up on one-third of the screen showing the different matches as Excalibur talks about them, and you get – you know, just like instead of just plastering the whole screen, which is like the visual, the way they do it, there's a way to just reframe it. And then you can also spread it out a little bit during the show and not just bombard people with it all at once. In other words, you can have, here's our two featured matches on Dynamite next week. And that's the majority of the screen. And that's what Excalibur talks about. But then there's a sidebar showing two or three other matches that he doesn't mention, but they show it to you, but he doesn't have to actually spew it out of his mouth. So there's a bunch of, there's a different ways to kind of accomplish the same thing, but either in a fresh, equal way or a subjectively better way. And that's what I'm hoping for. I just want them to rethink everything. You know, I was excited about it when SmackDown moved to Fox. You know, what are they going to do different? And WWE has done a lot with augmented reality. And I think that, you know, at first it was kind of weird. Now I think it'd be weird to watch a WWE show without augmented reality with their graphics. I think they actually do a really tasteful, good job with it, considering the subject matter and what they're trying to accomplish. And the lack of a stage and instead having an entrance area with a big screen. So there are, even when WWE had a good thing going, they found a way to add or augment what they were doing and give a fresh look to it, and not just rearrange things. I was actually half expecting them to destroy the set this week, Javier. I thought there would be an angle. Maybe that's on the Rampage taping. Aubrey, give us a call. Audrey, give us a call, Audrey. I want to hear if they destroyed the set at the end of Rampage at the taping tonight.
I remember those days when they were going to change the set. They would do that. I mean, my hope's the same. I mean, my biggest hope is that they, because the one thing I never liked is promoting what was coming up next or promoting a different show or something when you were in mid match. I've never liked that, and I keep thinking, like, you know, what happens when this stuff is collected and you're watching it, you know, 5 years from now, and they're talking about that slap, you know, they're promoting that, like that slap show or whatever else they might be promoting.
Yeah. All right. Anything else you want to add, Javier, before we sign off?
Let me see. I think that's about it. There is always something. So, okay, that was actually from last week. So, I think that's about it. I'm so going to regret because it always happens.
That's right.
Like, literally, like, the moment I hang up, I'm like, God damn, that's right. I should have written this down. All right, yeah. So at least everything that I've written down is good. But yeah.
Yeah, we won't be still on the air when you're when I get an email from you going, I remember now. So that's a downside of being a full-time co-host, you know, the co-host for the full length of the show, like tonight.
Yeah. So, and hey, I couldn't send in any corrections either. So,
well, we got a whole list of them, but I don't want to embarrass you.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm not. Totally joking. All right. Happy New Year, Javier. Always great having you on for the whole show.
Happy New Year. Have a good
one. Yep. And, thanks to our listeners, and sorry I didn't get back to our on-site apologies to our listeners. I didn't get back to our on-site correspondent volunteer sooner to solidify a call on the show, just with the holidays I got behind on some of the routines. So if you want to be an on-site correspondent for a future episode of the post-show, either Raw, Dynamite, or SmackDown, email me, WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com, WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com, and include the name of the city in the subject line. That helps. All right. Thanks again, Javier. Thanks, everybody. And we'll talk to you all next time.
Have a good night.